The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Back in 1998, we didn't hear that much about climate change. Some people were talking about it, but we really didn't have the emphasis on it that we have now. Seems like every time we look at the news, we see something that's related to climate change, whether it's the heat dome bringing triple-digit temperatures to the Pacific Northwest, or the possibility of climate change undermining structures like condominiums in Florida, potentially making them unsafe. Seems like every day there's something about our changing climate in the news. Back in 1998, when I talked to Whitley Strieber, he had just published a book that he co-wrote with the talk radio host Art Bell. It's called The Coming Global Superstorm. It was a bestseller. He had some kind of offbeat ideas. These guys were predicting that climate change would make it really cold, that we would have an ice storm that would cover the United States north of Kansas City, that we could get 4 or 5 feet of snow in New York City. Well, some of those predictions were clearly off base, but his emphasis on the changing climate and the rapidity of it was spot on. Let's listen now to Whitley Strieber talking about the coming global superstorm on the Best of the Book Nook.
Good afternoon, Miami Valley. Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. And joining us by telephone is Whitley Strieber. He and Art Bell have just written a book called The Coming Global Superstorm. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Whitley, we were just chatting a moment ago about this windstorm that just hit France and some other countries in Europe. And you were indicating this might be a precursor to what you're talking about in your book. Tell us about the coming global superstorm. What is this all about?
Well, this is about something, a fundamental change in climate that we expected to see in 10 years, 25 years. However, in the past 10 days, there have been a series of changes in the weather and in the fundamental condition of the oceans that suggests it may be happening much sooner. First, let's talk a little bit about climate shift and what it is. Some years ago, there began to be, an effort to determine exactly what temperatures were in the distant past, by coring into the ice of the Greenland glaciers and the Antarctic, and measuring by the condition of the cores what the average temperature and rainfall patterns had been year by year, and they were rather shocked to discover that global climate change is like a rubber band. It stretches and stretches and stretches, and then suddenly, bang, everything changes in a matter apparently of 10 years or even less. This is the concept of sudden climate change. And it has been determined why this happens. The process goes back about 3 million years. At that time, the Central American land bridge rose out of the sea due to volcanic activity and cut off a massive equatorial current that was flowing around the center of this planet and had been for millions of years, making the planet's weather very stable. When this current was cut off, a new current formed. It goes up the South American coast, is cut off by Central America and is forced all the way up into the Arctic. It draws warm water from the tropics far north. The Gulf Stream is part of it. The basic current is called the North Atlantic Current, the basic deep current. And it floods Europe and the northern part of North America, the northeastern part of North America, with warm water that enables us to have the warm summers and relatively mild climate at higher latitudes that we do. It's hard to realize even that England is at the latitude of Nova Scotia, but England has a much milder climate because of these currents. These currents have a habit of moving suddenly. They will drop down into the central Atlantic, and when that happens, the weather changes fantastically and quickly, maybe in a single season. We don't know. We're amateurs. The science, the verdict is not finally in on how fast it changes. But looking at what is happening in Europe right now, there is evidence that the array of dreadful storms that we predict for Europe in our book could be on their way just literally as we speak.
And for listeners who aren't aware of it, there was a tremendous windstorm which devastated Paris in particular. They were talking about winds up to 100 miles per hour, 110 miles per hour.
160 mile per hour winds were recorded at Notre Dame Cathedral yesterday.
Holy smokes.
The highest winds recorded ever in France. 2 weeks ago, an equally terrible storm swept across northern Europe. At one point, from the Netherlands to Poland, there were winds with gusts up to 120 miles an hour, or averaging 70 miles an hour. There have been hundreds of people killed in these storms, millions, in fact, billions of dollars worth of property damage. The storms are, in some cases, in the case of Holland, and I mean of Denmark, and in the case of France, they're unprecedented. And here's what's happening. The North Atlantic Drift, which is the surface part of the North Atlantic Current, is in the process of changing. The drift draws warm water up into the North Sea, and at the moment, the drift is weakening and beginning to flow in the opposite direction, with the result that the water in the North Sea is rapidly becoming much colder even than it normally is at this time of year, and unusual, very unusual weather phenomena are occurring. For example, a low pressure area over Europe ended up abutting against a high that was hanging over North Africa, and the differences were extreme. This was a very low pressure area, and it sucked air into itself, because low pressure obviously is in the direction of a vacuum, and high pressure is in the opposite direction. This is one of the things that causes wind patterns on the Earth. It sucked this wind into the air from the high pressure system into itself and created these high winds. And in fact, the pattern still persists. It's still doing it. They've had yesterday was another dreadful day in Europe in terms of wind, and it's not evident that it's ended yet.
My guest is Whitley Strieber. He and Art Bell have written a new book called The Coming Global Superstorm, published by Pocket Books. It's been out for about a week or so. And they say tornado-like winds also ravaged Switzerland. The president of Switzerland was quoted as saying, quote, "We forget from time to time that nature has its own rules." Now, if we go back through time, there have been superstorms in the distant past, have there not?
Well, let's be very clear about this. We believe there have been. But what we do know for certain is that there have been extraordinary changes in climate that have happened very quickly. There was a period at about 10 to 12,000 BC when a very sudden change took place. What happened was was similar on the surface to what seems to be happening now, which is that the global temperatures, the Ice Age had ended in a period of global warming, and temperatures rose and then suddenly started to spike over about a 200-year period. And if you look at the graphic record of temperature now, it's doing precisely the same thing. Then they dropped off very quickly. And during the time of this drop-off, when we surveyed the fossil record, we found evidence, some of it fairly direct and some of it indirect, that a very substantial series of storms had occurred at that time of really almost unprecedented ferocity. And when you think about it, if the North Atlantic Current forces warm air or draws warm air with it up into the far northern part of the Northern Hemisphere, and the foundation that is holding that air in place suddenly disappears, then naturally there will be a dramatic effect on the weather, and there's every evidence that once the current starts to move, it moves quite quickly. So yes, even though we can't prove it, and there's never been any computer modeling on this subject, at least not yet, we do believe that there is substantial evidence that this change, when it comes, is really violent.
Whitley, aren't you concerned that you're going to scare people half to death with this book?
We need to be scared. There's 100 people dead in Europe in the past 10 days. There's 30,000 people have lost their lives in Venezuela in the past week. These events are related to climate change, to fundamental climate change. The directors of the British Meteorological Office and the United States Director of Meteorology last week on December the 23rd issued an unprecedented joint announcement, which was not picked up in the American press at all, which was really shocked me. I would have thought that a paper like the New York Times would have picked this up immediately, but they didn't. They issued a statement to the effect that weather was turning much more violent, that global warming was a serious issue, that it was going to cause the weather to become more violent, and we had to deal with it. We had to address it. So it's not that we're trying to scare people. It's that we're trying to say, hey, wake up. We have to fundamentally change our policy here. Global warming is not something gradual. Global warming comes hand in hand with sudden climate change, and it's going to be really dangerous. And we can start planning for it. We can do something about it. It's not impossible to deal with.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, amplifying voices from every corner of our community. Looking back on the Best of the Book Nook this morning to an interview I did in 1998 with the co-author of The Coming Global Superstorm. His name is Whitley Strieber. He co-wrote it with Art Bell. And he's talking about climate change and a lot of other things in this conversation. And we'll bring you more of it right after this. The Best of the Book Nook continues on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Back in 1998, I interviewed Whitley Strieber. It was my final interview of that year. Talked about the coming global superstorm with him that he co-wrote with the very unusual talk radio host Art Bell, who used to broadcast on hundreds of stations overnight. He had some very strange programs. And Whitley Strieber, when we did this interview, had just begun hosting his own radio show as part of Art Bell's broadcasting empire. Let's listen now to Whitley Strieber talking about climate change back in 1998.
Whitley, here in this country, there seems to be a debate still about whether global warming is even happening. We have some industries that create emissions, which have been part of the global warming problem, who are adamant in their denial of this problem.
They are going to be in the same position in 10 years because of the way they are dealing with this, that the cigarette companies are in now. The cigarette companies, knowing perfectly well what the truth was because their own studies told them, lied about their products for years. These industries, I think, are in the position of probably having access. In fact, they certainly have access to the same studies that we do. And yet they continue to spend, ironically, more money than the entire environmental movement does on telling us that this isn't happening when you can see it all around you now. This is from the British newspaper, The Independent. Global warming is now changing the world's climate rapidly, and humanity faces a critical situation because of it. The chief meteorologists of Britain and the United States warned today in a remarkable joint statement. That was on December the 23rd.
And to me,
I was very shocked. I didn't hear that statement mentioned on National Public Radio. It was not on any television broadcasts in the United States except the BBC broadcast that comes over PBS. It did not appear in the New York Times, in the Washington Post. It was all over the newspapers in Europe.
Well, it's just been mentioned here in Southwest Ohio.
For the first time, a week later. Now, by us.
We carry the BBC as well, so it's possible it was carried on the BBC.
It was carried on the BBC, on the radio as well, yes. Uh-huh. But never. And after all, it's not like it was just a British statement. Jim Baker is the head of the U.S. meteorological head as well. So it was Peter Ewens, who was the head of the British Meteorological Office, and James Baker, who is his U.S. counterpart. And they sent this letter to newspapers all around the world, and they got this, I think, quite shocking response or lack of response. And it's because of two things. One is, we don't want to look at this. And two is, the oil companies want to make sure we don't. And that has got to change, because, I mean, our children's lives are at stake. If the North Atlantic Current, and this is, let's distinguish between the current and the drift.
Uh-huh.
The drift is the surface water. This is the, and this is where you will, if the current is going to change its route, you'll see the drift changing first, which is now happening.
Hmm.
When the current changes its route, we are going to experience in first of all, much of Europe will become unviable in terms of a place to live. The growing season in places like England will be ended for at least a couple of years and maybe longer. The northeastern United States and all of eastern Canada will be dramatically affected. They will have the worst winter they've ever had, and this will, a winter so bad it will extend into April or May. So millions of lives will be lost if this occurs. And the fact that there is this effort going on to prevent policy from being enacted or even really addressed by the Congress in this area is dangerous to the welfare of mankind. The oil companies started doing this when they thought that global warming was gradual. Now that we see that this sudden climate change not only happens but is right upon us, it changes everything. We need to address this on a policy level in Washington and right now.
The book is The Coming Global Superstorm. Whitley Strieber has joined us. He wrote it with Art Bell, and it just came out on Pocket Books. It's sort of a War of the Worlds scenario to be here on the radio talking about something like this. I get concerned that someone's just going to tune in and think that they're actually hearing the weather forecast. You make some suggestions in the book of things that we can do as individuals that can help to alleviate this problem.
Yes. Well, there's a lot that can be done by people in the developed world. And the reason is that not only do we use a lot of energy, we have a lot of control over the energy that we do use. An individual can be responsible for reducing the amount of carbon dioxide being emitted into the atmosphere by thousands of tons a year just by doing something as simple as going down to the hardware store and buying a fiberglass insulating cover for the water heater and having the house insulated reducing the temperature by 3 degrees or 4 degrees in the summer, in the winter, and doing the opposite in the summer. In other words, run the house at 68 in the winter and at I'm getting mixed up about the. In any case, run the house slightly cooler in the winter and slightly warmer in the summer.
Uh-huh.
And if everyone did this, it would make a significant difference in the amount of carbon dioxide entering the atmosphere. But there's something very important that I need to explain at this point, and that's this. This is not something that is 100% caused by man.
Right.
It's very important to understand, when we did our survey of the past, we found that these global warming events are recurrent. They happen between ice ages, and they've happened. We've had 10 or 11 of them at least in the past 3 million years. In other words, they're part of nature, which means that in the end, we probably can't stop it. But we can do two things. One is, if we reduce our own emissions, we slow it down and probably also make it less violent. And two is, if we address this in a sane, rational, and careful way and do that now, we can plan for it so that human life and human civilization are preserved across the barrier of climate change.
And it wouldn't hurt to try to figure out another planet we could move to. Right?
Well, we...
Seriously.
In all seriousness...
I'm not making fun.
I know, I'm not either.
Okay.
In all seriousness, we are here. The amount of propulsion energy that we would need to effectively colonize off-world is unimaginably huge compared to the amount we have. It's not a viable alternative. I wish it was, too. It isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the foreseeable future, not for millions and millions of people. We have to think of this in terms of what happens to us here, because this is where this is all going to unfold. No one's leaving, maybe a few astronauts.
The book is The Coming Global Superstorm, written by Art Bell and Whitley Strieber. Whitley has joined us by telephone from warm Texas, sunny San Antonio. Whitley, the book is very cleverly constructed. The way that you juxtapose the fictional scenarios with the warning scenarios, the way that you tell the story as if this were actually occurring, and then you go back to present the problem once again.
Yes.
I really enjoyed the fictional story, even though it's about us and this horrible storm that's possibly going to happen. You really were very clever the way that you wrote it, and I really enjoyed the progression of the storm and reading about what was happening. It was like a thriller.
Well, it was written that way to capture your imagination, to make you think about this, and to enable you to taste this as you read it, to get a taste of what it will be like, so that you hopefully will sit down and write your congressman, because there is a lot of interest in this book in Congress, by the way. I've already received some calls about it, because there are, on both sides of the fence, Republicans and Democrats alike, there is a growing awareness that sudden climate change is the real issue, and that there must be policy developed to address this, and there must be science done to understand it first so that we can develop that policy. So that's what I'm hoping you'll do. I'm hoping everybody who reads it will realize that the book is not a hopeless story. It's not saying this is going to happen and there's nothing we can do about it. It's saying that with planning and careful effort on our part, we can do a lot to survive it.
In the final fictional portion, when they're going into New York City to look for survivors, that was dreadful and wonderfully written, the images that you created of these people, these search parties, and just what New York City looked like. It was fascinating.
What New York City would look like under 40 or 50 feet of snow?
Uh-huh.
Well, that might very well happen. That particular area is, as you know, capable of generating extraordinary blizzards now, and under these circumstances, I have to tell you this, by the way, with regard to the way we understand the weather right now, that is not going to happen in New York City this season.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to happen next season. I don't really know when. It's possible it could happen in three or four seasons, but one of the things that we need to do, this is getting back to this policy issue again, is we must monitor the oceans much, much more carefully than we do. We know, for example, that the North Atlantic Current's flow rates have been slowing down over the past 10 years, but we don't understand quite what that means. And let me give you an example of this. In the New Scientist of November the 27th, under the headline, "There's now alarming evidence that Europe is facing an ice age," the prestigious, they reported that the North Atlantic Current may already be ceasing to flow properly. The Greenland sea pump, which is crucial to our weather, has, quote, been dramatically reduced in power, according to study by the University of Bergen, New Bergen in Norway. This means that this all may be unfolding much more quickly than we thought. But as far as New York City getting a dump of snow like that this season, no. Next season, probably not. The season after that, if the fundamental current is changing its course, then that's when it would begin, 2 or 3 years from now.
My guest is Whitley Strieber. The book is The Coming Global Superstorm. He wrote it with Art Bell. How does that work when two guys get together and write a book? Who did what?
Who does what?
Yeah.
Well, we are both talkers. We do a lot of talking. Art, of course, talks for a living on the radio. I have a weekly radio program as well. And so we talked, mostly. I did the writing. I mean, I did the actual clerical work of putting it down on paper. But that was only because there was, you know, that was just the easiest way to do it. There's no sense in having it in pieces in two different computers. I don't really know how we worked. It just, you know, it just sort of worked. We did a lot of research. Art's a guy that can, he is a digger, and he comes up with all kinds of unusual little facts and things, you know, and he would call me every day or two with something new. Quite interesting. I mean, yeah, I never knew what to expect when he called, what he might have found.
Now, did he come up with the evidence of these lost civilizations? Was that his research?
In part, yes.
This was fascinating to me. I had not heard about some of this. Obviously, the Sphinx we all are familiar with, but
yes,
these other ones that move these gigantic things around, and who were these people? Tell us what you're talking about.
Oh, it's just so fascinating. I don't remember exactly which one of us came up with this, but to me, the most amazing of those stories was the story of Nan Madol,
uh-huh,
which is a group of 21 mostly man-made islands off the island of Ponape in Micronesia, way out in the middle of the Pacific. These islands have on them structures made out of gigantic logs of basalt, some of them more than a ton in weight. They contain 458,000 tons of basalt. Now, that is the equivalent, well, it's an almost unimaginably huge undertaking. And not only that, there are areas there where there have been extensive tunnels dug under the water, through the coral reefs, way deeper than anyone could go without breathing equipment, much less without, even if they had, like were pearl divers and could hold their breath a long time, the amount of energy that it would be necessary to dig even a little bit under those circumstances would be higher. They'd have to come right to the surface. But the tunnels are there. But the basalt is there. We know where the basalt was moved from. We found the quarry. Or I didn't, but some archaeologists have. They know probably how it was moved. There was nothing mysterious about it. They were probably shipped on barges made of reeds, because we find pieces of basalt all over the floor of the sea in this area, because not all of the logs made it where they were going. But this took an immense amount of logistics. It took thousands of people, and it took years. Who were they? When did they do it? We have evidence of pottery there that's about 3,000 or 4,000 years old. We have a fire base, which was built in, a fire was built inside one of the structures that's about 900 years old, but who's to know who built that fire? They may have built it many, many years after it was, after the structure was completed. This is only one, actually. There's another one in Baalbek, in a very famous structure in Lebanon, where they moved 600-ton blocks of stone miles from a quarry to the location they were in. The problem is this. If the stones were moved sometime in the past couple of thousand years, as they must have been, who did it? The reason we have to ask that question is that it's not difficult to do the math to determine the amount of energy necessary to move the stones. We have no way, there's nothing that they could have rolled the stones on, because whatever they could have carved and quarried would have disintegrated. Wooden logs, for example, would have disintegrated under the weight of these stones. They couldn't have rolled them a foot. They couldn't have had enough people. There's not enough space on the sides of them for enough people to stand and push them all at the same time. And in any case, they couldn't be pushed at all without something to roll them on. They couldn't be dragged, because the ropes they could make in those days weren't nearly strong enough, and yet they're there. We just, as we looked through the past, you know what we actually found was the most exciting thing. We found that archaeology and paleontology have just scratched the surface of the past. It's full of mysteries that we don't understand.
And the connection between these lost civilizations and the coming global superstorm, our listeners are probably curious to know.
Well, I don't blame them. We talked a lot about whether or not there was a connection. And we decided that, as we say in the book, it's possible that there is, for two reasons. One is, whoever built these things had capacities that we have not yet recovered. We don't know how they did it. Two, they're not here anymore. They are lost. Whoever built these things is gone. There is a lot of evidence, as I alluded to earlier, that there was a very substantial amount of a very substantial weather change. In fact, we know it happened about 10,000 or 12,000 years ago. The weather suddenly got much, much colder. And there's some evidence in the fossil record that this was extremely violent when it happened, which we also discuss. This evidence is controversial. But if it did happen, maybe it accounts for the death of the civilization, and that's what we were trying to explore.
This is the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back to 1998, my interview with Whitley Strieber for his book, The Coming Global Superstorm. We'll bring you our final segment right after this. It's the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back to 1998, talking to Whitley Strieber, who was the co-author of The Coming Global Superstorm. He co-wrote it with Art Bell, the late Art Bell, who was a talk radio host who was very popular for many years. And we were talking about climate change back in 1998, a subject that is very much discussed nowadays. And Whitley had confidence that Congress was going to do something about climate change, that our politicians were going to step up and do something about it. And here we are 23 years later, just watching it happen. Here's part three, our final segment, with Whitley Strieber on the Best of the Book Nook.
What has been the response to the book so far?
Well, Art's getting lots and lots of email about the book. The book almost sold out the first printing of 140,000 copies in less than 10 days since it was published. So I guess it'll go on the bestseller lists. It's very interesting, actually, to look on Amazon.com's reviews. This morning when I looked, there were 22 reviews of the book.
From readers?
From readers, mm-hmm. Right. Most of them are very positive reviews. And they're quite long, searching reviews. You know, the people are really thinking about the book. Some of them are like attacks. You know, Art Bell's very controversial. I'm very controversial, so there are attacks. I'm happy or sad to say that all the attacks so far are on art, but maybe someone can get on there and remedy that situation. Anyway, Amazon should probably not publish the ad hominem attacks. They say that the reviews should be about the book, but I think they actually just publish everything. In any case, the book's got, out of 5 stars, it's got 4 stars and change, so most of the reviews are very positive.
Now, Whitley, you mentioned the fact that you and Art Bell are considered to be controversial. Why, in your estimation, are you controversial? Is it your radio program? Is it the books you've written?
It's the books I've written. I mean, I wrote Communion 10 years ago, 15 years ago, in 1985. It's nearly 15 years, which speculated about whether or not I had an experience of alien abduction, and that's damn controversial, because that's not supposed to be happening. And still, 15 years later, after all of the research I've done into that, I can't tell you it didn't happen. I don't know what happened.
Allow me to confess my ignorance. I have not read the book. What happened?
This is now an old story, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will be aware of it. On December the 26th, 1985, I had an apparent close encounter with aliens. I say apparent because there are a lot of very sound scientific reasons why there shouldn't be any aliens floating around here.
Uh-huh.
However, I was never able to pin down any particular cause of this experience except something that happened in physical reality. It looked real, it felt real, except it supposedly couldn't have been. So I went through a lot of neurological tests and psychological tests, et cetera, and so forth, and I wrote a book about the whole experience called Communion, and that made me quite controversial because it made a substantial number of people think that I was really brave to come out and say that this was happening and that it was unexplained, and then others were saying, well, he must be a complete nut or a huckster or something.
Is there any concern on your part that 15 years later, because of that book, people will look at this book and say, nah, I doubt his credibility because of that Communion thing?
Sure, that'll happen. However, most of the people who say that wouldn't open their mind to anything else that's new anyway. So uh-huh. I don't think it matters very much. No, mostly people are very interested in Communion. The book says right in the frontispiece, it says when you look into the unknown, sometimes the human mind winks back from the dark. It was a pretty conservative book. You know, I don't think that I didn't acquire a reputation as an out-and-out lunatic, just as a slightly goofy writer, and I think that a slightly goofy writer can do something credible at least once in a while.
Well, we're really honored that you could join us today on the program. The book is The Coming Global Superstorm. Whitley Strieber has joined us. He wrote the book with Art Bell. It recently came out on the Pocket Books imprint, and apparently, there are a few copies in circulation out there. You say they've just gone to another printing?
Yes. They went to another printing about 5 days ago. So I guess the second printing started about, the book came out on the 14th, and the second printing started about a week after it came out, so it must be moving very well indeed. And that's good, because the next thing Art and I plan to do is to start a political initiative. We're going to Congress, and we're going to try to make ourselves heard. And if this book is on the bestseller list, they'll listen all the more closely, because there is a lot of concern building in the Congress about sudden climate change. They are very well aware of the fact that something needs to be done about it, and what I'm hoping is to see that the climatological and oceanographic communities will receive substantial funding soon to really get into data gathering and modeling so that we can get an understanding of what we may be facing.
So you're looking at potential for, say, congressional hearings on the problem, or how exactly would you approach Congress on something like this?
I think we need a bill, and I think we need budget items. I think that the National Academy of Sciences needs to be able to develop, to ask oceanographic and climatological scientists to develop proposals for increasing the data flow from these areas and studying them. Basically, it's not really hearings that are necessary. I don't think it's not on that scale. What we probably need is a bill. And if not a bill, then additional funds allocated to the relevant research areas. I don't think that, when Congress does hearings, it's the policy issues are more fundamental than this. I believe that the weather, as we look around us, the data we do have is telling us already that we need to address this. And it's just a question of how to do it. I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that it'll be done in the next Congress without too much trouble even.
Whitley, when I walk into a bookstore looking for a particular book, sometimes if the book isn't in a really specific genre like mysteries or whatever, I have a hard time locating the book. Where are they filing this one? Is it in fiction? Where is it?
It's in nonfiction and it's in science.
Okay.
Science and nature and nonfiction.
Because it straddles. I mean, you could even put it in thrillers.
Thanks. That means that we did our job well, because we want this book to be readable, comprehensible. We want it to touch on a lot of the mysteries that are connected with this whole issue of climate, and above all, to explain the theory in a simple, clear way, to let the reader know and get a taste of how global climate change, sudden climate change, might feel, with also letting the reader know that, after all, Art and I are amateurs. Maybe it will not be like we think, but one thing we do think is true. The change is going to occur, and to be honest with you, I think it might even be worse than we think, judging from what's happening in Europe now. When, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, what happens if the North Atlantic drift starts to change, I would have said, well, not a lot. That's why the North Atlantic drift isn't mentioned in the book, only the current.
Uh-huh.
We did not realize that changes in the surface drift would cause such explosive weather as they have. So it might be that it's worse than we think.
Now, when you heard about this fierce weekend storm in Western Europe, when you heard about the tragedy with the mudslides and all and the flooding in Venezuela, did you have that feeling like, oh my, it's happening already? Were you surprised? Were you saying to yourself, gosh, I actually was right about this? What was your response?
No, little bit of concern that we felt was when we saw the article in The New Scientist about Europe facing another ice age. That scared us both, because we talked on the phone, and I said, we weren't expecting this for 25 years. And then we thought to ourselves, there will be storms, and we'll see how severe they are. About a week later, the first storm hit, and that was the first one of these big storms. There have been two, and still continuing into the second, huge windstorms in Europe since this started to occur. I felt glad that the book was out, because it would be if we were still working on it, the feeling that we might be too late would be really scary. It'd be very hard to live with that. The feeling that we might be just in time makes it a little easier, but I must admit that it's the storms in Europe have waked me up at night. I have had nightmares about them, because they should not be here like this soon.
Well, separating your interest from the interest of your publisher. Publishers publish books because they want to sell books. They want to make money. And I can imagine at least one or two executives at Pocket Books probably saw the headline and said, all right.
They may have.
Uh-huh.
But you have to think about the families who lost their homes.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the pictures of Versailles, it's absolutely, the gardens have been completely destroyed. And there are people all over Europe right now whose loved ones are gone because of this.
And
that's primarily what I'm thinking about. I don't think too many people at Pocket Books were gleeful over those storms. They certainly didn't sound that way when they were talking to me. Mostly they were scared.
Well, it's a scary book, and it's called The Coming Global Superstorm. And for folks who were thinking about maybe a trip to Paris this summer, those plans might change. Apparently, Paris was completely devastated. They're talking about $100 million in damage just to chimneys and roofs alone.
Yes, plus the loss of some very, very important stained glass. And, you know, Europe's the heart of our civilization. We must not lose it. We cannot let it get pummeled down like this. We got to do what we can.
Now, would you recommend that folks obtain things like snowshoes just in case? I mean, where we live,
No. You
would never think of having something like that.
Let's solve the problem rather than prepare for it in quite that way. First, we need science to tell us what is actually going to happen, and that's going to take some doing, but it's got to be done. So that maybe it won't matter. I mean, maybe buying snowshoes isn't the issue. Maybe we have to plan for it in another way. I don't know, but we've got to find out. We've got to do the planning, the preparation. We've got to gather the data, and we've got to evolve a response.
Whitley, we have just a couple of moments left. Tell me a little bit about your radio program. When does that air, and what's the gist of it?
Well, Art's radio program is called Coast to Coast, and it airs late evening after midnight almost everywhere in the United States. It's the third largest radio program in the country. My radio program airs on Sunday evenings from 6 to 10 on the West Coast, and an hour later each time zone as you go east.
Uh-huh.
It is delayed on lots of stations. It airs on a total of about 300 stations. 170 or 80 air it live, and the rest air it all delayed. But you can certainly hear it, and to find out more about the programs, go to the Art Bell website, www.artbell.com, and they're both up there.
And it's called Dreamland?
Mine is called Dreamland.
Okay. Yes. How long have you been doing that?
About 6 months.
Is it fun?
Well, you probably know this, but when I first started, I thought, what fun it'll be to be on the radio. That microphone's a black hole. I said everything I had to say in about the first 30 seconds, and I realized I've got 3 hours left. What am I going to do now? But I've gotten used to it, and it's a joy, actually. It's a wonderful experience. My wife, Ann, produces the show, and we're both just having a wonderful time with it.
And you've been listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, my 1998 interview with Whitley Strieber, the co-author with Art Bell, of The Coming Global Superstorm. Whitley began his career as a novelist with the horror novels The Wolfen in 1978 and The Hunger in 1981. And as he mentioned in our conversation, he contends that he was abducted from his cabin in upstate New York on the evening of December 26, 1985, by non-human beings. He wrote about that experience in Communion in 1987. And at the time I did that interview with him, we didn't have Wikipedia. I didn't have Google to search. I didn't know. I should have known about that book, but I didn't. So I was really taken by surprise when right there in the middle of the interview, you start talking about being abducted by aliens. And then after that interview ended, it was the second to the last day of the year. I went on the air and I said, if you liked that interview, you really ought to make a pledge as we close out the year to your public radio station. And the phone rang. And a woman in Beaver Creek said, I just heard that wonderful interview with Whitley Strieber, and I'd like to make a pledge. And I said, that's wonderful. I said, how much would you like to give? And she said, $1,000. And I tried not to faint. Her check arrived 2 days later. Thanks for supporting your public radio station on WYSO. You just heard the best of the Book Nook.